truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 5 of China Jedication, all things education-ish. Another special guest we have in a classroom today, a good friend of mine, but also a very good... Well, I'm not going to say anything, actually. Can you tell me your current position in the education field, please, sir?
I am a third and fourth grade teacher right now, a homeroom teacher. I teach all subjects, so I go to battle every day with the 8 and 9 year olds, and it's a good time.
And where would be your grade 3-4 classroom at the moment in the world and school?
Well, I teach at QSI, which is Quality Schools International, in Zhuhai, China. And that is right on the southern coast of China, not far from Macau. In fact, I can see Macau from my classroom window. And Hong Kong is very close also.
And you can also see a mountain that's now gone. And lots of construction coming out in the rail line in Nanhe here to out to the airport. I think that's what that is going past.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a rural setting in the middle of America, so we didn't have mountains to start with, and if we did, they wouldn't have just disappeared inside of a year. So it's pretty amazing when you live in China that they can literally remove a mountain in a matter of months.
Yes.
But I guess they must have needed it out of the way, or they wouldn't have gone to all that trouble.
Indeed. So, how long have you been in China for, Mr. Kerr or Jamie? I'll go with Jamie.
I prefer Jamie. I'm not a formal person. We have been in China. We're finishing our fourth year. So, we were in Shenzhen, China for 2 years, also with QSI, but at a different school.
Okay.
Same organization, different school. And then we're finishing our second year here in Zhuhai.
Were you elementary grade room in Shenzhen?
I was. I taught what would be second grade my first year. I taught third grade the second year, and then since moving here, I've taught third and fourth grade.
I mean, just on a, maybe people listening would be interested, Shenzhen's the biggest city, of course, actually fastest growing city in China, I've been told.
Yeah.
And Zhuhai, a little bit smaller, but growing fast and blowing up mountains quickly, as you said.
Absolutely.
What's been the, have you enjoyed being in Zhuhai more? I mean, you're a family man, you've got three children,
yep.
One girl, two boys.
Yep.
What's been the comparison between Shenzhen and Zhuhai?
You know, everybody that comes from Shenzhen to Zhuhai automatically notes that it's quieter and it's not as busy. So there's more room to maneuver.
Yeah.
There's more bike paths. I mean, it's just, if you do the math, there's just a lot less people. Shenzhen has upwards of 20 million people. And we are at maybe 2 million here in Zhuhai, although it's growing rapidly. So basically, just it's more of a laid-back atmosphere.
And that's something you like more, yeah?
I do. Now, the upside is the laid-back part. The drawback is that Zhuhai, you could characterize it as a little bit on the boring side compared to a Shenzhen. But a guy like me, who is kind of a boring guy when it comes to lifestyle, doesn't bother me a bit.
Yeah. Completely dedicated to your classroom, which is wonderful. So, Jamie, what brought you to China? Like, just tell us what happened there. You woke up one morning and... No, of course you didn't.
No, I'm going to try to abbreviate this as much as possible. I've had a kind of an unusual road to being an educator. My road went to Taiwan first. My wife was a teacher, so we went to Taiwan where I was able to work in a... because I had a bachelor's degree, even though I wasn't licensed. We were there for 3 years. Then I went back and tried to join the normal workforce in America, but missed teaching. So we moved to Texas, where I became a certified teacher. And then I left Texas. We left Texas and went back to our home of Iowa. Worked outside of education for a couple years again, and then ended up in China because some friends of ours joined this organization, and they spoke highly of it, and okay. we were ready to move back overseas, and I was ready to jump back into the fray of teaching kids.
And anyway, I would have done right overseas. Just at the time, it wasn't like a particular fascination for coming east, was it? It was just
no.
where they put you.
We were set to go to Kazakhstan. There was a very good chance there was a job waiting for us because there was a teaching couple who quit. In the end, our heart wasn't in Kazakhstan at that time, but we had by that time researched QSI so heavily that we decided it was still a place we wanted to be. And we noticed Shenzhen had an opening for a teaching couple. And we loved Hong Kong, so we thought, it's close to Hong Kong, let's go. And here we are today.
Did you get to go to Hong Kong a lot? I mean, we're close here in Zhuhai. Do you get to go a lot to Hong Kong? Because it seems right there, but it also seems not there.
Yeah, it's kind of deceiving because I can see the new territories from Shenzhen. But to go there, to go through the immigration area at Shenzhen Wan, is not an experience for the faint of heart. And it actually, I can swim across the bay, I think, faster than it takes sometimes just to get on that bus and go across. So you have to be careful with timing.
Yeah.
And it has to be depend on where you're going in Hong Kong. But we did try to go as much as we could because it's a nice place to visit.
Yeah, it's an international city, isn't it, Hong Kong? It's the London of the East, I like to say.
I've heard that said.
As a Brit. Okay, so let's roll back the years even more. Okay. You are an Iowanian. Mm-hmm. Could I say that?
Iowan. You're free to say Iowanian, but technically it's called an Iowan.
Now, Iowa is in what part of America here? Because I'm not totally up on the job.
Think about Chicago, in the middle, and then drive west about 4 hours, and you'll just find a flat place with all corn and a bunch of pigs.
And a bunch of pigs, yeah, you've got a lot of pigs, more pigs than...
It's the leading pig producer in the world.
Yeah, so...
Also eggs, if we're counting. Leading egg producer also. Very agricultural state.
Yes, very agricultural.
Yeah.
And what was your... Because you went to school there, obviously, growing up. Just paint a picture of what that was like. You know, were you in the same school growing up? Like, was it a small school in a... Would it village or a town?
This is going to blow you away. We would call it a town. I grew up in a town of 850 people.
Okay, that is
And
very...
my grade level had between 9 and 13 kids in it. All through elementary school, depending on, you know, kids move in or move out.
Yeah.
Basically, it was around 10 to a dozen kids.
Okay.
Wow. And that was normal to me. So
yeah.
I consider that a good education because, you know, it was a tiny school, but we obviously the ratio was really good. And we had quality teachers. Two of our teachers that I had personally ended up going on to be superintendents of entire districts. So it was a good upbringing and a good education.
Just on the superintendent thing, I know in America you call them superintendents. We have a different name for them. It all sounds rather policey.
It does.
Superintendents. Are they police officer teachers or
no?
No.
It
so
just
why do
means
they call
like
them?
It's like big dog, boss of the.
That would be better, big dog.
Yeah. If the district has, say, the district has a secondary school and then several elementary schools, and it's all called one name. That's just the guy that or the girl.
That's the superintendent.
That's the person that oversees all of those.
Do you call them, if you were a superintendent, would I, if I was in America, say, hey, Superintendent Kurt, could I have a word?
You would not.
Right.
It's not generally that formal. Where I'm from, actually, our superintendent would insist we called him Mark, which it was hard for me to do because as a kid, I had him as a teacher, so it was Mr., you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he most places, for sure, teachers and parents would call them by their first name, likely. Or at most, they would say Mr. Smith.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Smith. So that school was nice for you. You enjoyed it, yeah?
Yeah.
You had a good, you would say, you know, had a good kind of a feeling of school as you grew up.
I would say, I mean, I didn't know any different. It's not like I came from a big city and then went there. In that case, I might not have been so fond of my little village, but for me, that was normal, and I sometimes I wish I could give my kids the same experience.
Did you have a lot of pork chops for lunch?
We had so many pork chops that the pigs were running scared. Every time my family came around, the pigs hit. Yeah, we had a lot of pork chops. It's meat and potatoes there.
Yeah.
That's why there's a lot of big fellas in Iowa.
Okay. So, moving on then, as you got older, where did you go? So you were in high school in the same place, and then you...
Yeah.
Okay, and then tell me where you went to university. What?
Well, I stayed within my home state. I went to Iowa State University, which was like 2.5 hour drive from my house, from my hometown. Not a huge deal. But after university, I told my wife, I'd like to move somewhere, just maybe like pretty far away, like maybe 5 hours, like maybe Wisconsin. And I was thinking maybe just cross state lines, just long enough to experience a whole different set of people and environment. And she said, how about we move overseas? And my answer to her was, why? Why would I want to move overseas? That had never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
She said, why not? So there we were in Taiwan.
And that was that before you met John, who put you into the QSI network, who recommended the QSI net?
Yeah, this was many years before.
Okay.
This was right
when you went back
married.
To Texas. You got the... Okay.
But in fact, the same friends who got us into QSI had taught in Egypt in like the maybe 2000, 2001. And my wife had just finished meeting with her girlfriend in wherever she lived. And then she had told her all about overseas life. And then she came back home and said the aforementioned sentence, how would you like to move overseas? And I said, why?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
she had the bug before I ever thought of it.
Yeah, and there's no looking back now, right?
No, I don't think so.
It's fun.
I'm not necessarily your typical international guy, expat. I'm not like looking to go bungee jumping and skydiving and travel all the time. I'm kind of boring. I like sitting in one place. But having said that, the international life fits us pretty well.
Yeah.
Because of the amenities available to your kids and just the thought of my kids literally have friends from, I think, at least 4 continents.
Yeah, that's a really good plus point, isn't it? It's a really enriching experience, I think, to grow up with that. So, great stuff. So, favorite teacher? They kind of always say we have one. Anyone come to mind straight away?
You know, my favorite teacher probably growing up was, he was a hardcore, he was old school. all my classes over the years know this man vicariously through my stories.
Come on, what's his name?
His name was Mr. Dan Vogler.
Dan.
Big Dan. And he wore these cowboy boots. They were steel pointed and they came to a point. And he always had a cool beard, well-groomed beard. And he was a muscular guy. I don't know, he was probably... I don't know, low, mid-30s at the time I had him, I don't know. But he walked into the room and he would say, the first day of school, he'd go, guys, so we're like 10, or 9 years old or whatever. He goes, guys, I can make school fun or I can make this a bear cat. And I don't care which way we do it, but it's your choice. And then he'd look down his shoe, he goes, see these cowboy boots? These are size 14. You don't want these in your back. What did he say? You don't want one of these in your backside. Just do what you're told. Okay, so old school man. Today's standards, you'd think harsh. But the man would not give up until he squeezed the last drop of the best out of you.
Wonderful.
And you'd cry. So, like, as an adult, I'm not a guy who feels the need to cry, really ever, hardly. But as a kid, I would cry if I got frustrated. Well, you'd walk into math class on a given day, and half our class of 10, so 4 or 5 of us would be crying, and he would look at you and he'd say, all right, when you're done bawling, get back over here and do this math. Figure out what you did wrong on the math. Like, he was just a tough man.
Love it.
And looking back, like, the last day, he had to leave early because he was taking a job actually as a superintendent. He was one of the guys that went on to that role. And he cried when he said goodbye to us.
Oh.
And I could not believe this mountain of a man, this man's man, had any tears to cry. So I saw both sides of him. So I guess I don't try to be like him, but I admire those qualities that he passed on to us. And when I notice them in myself, it makes me feel good.
The boots, you must have heard them coming down the hallway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And one more cool thing about his boots is once in a while, we would talk him into playing kickball with us. And you'd roll the ball in, and he would kick it over the playground, over the swing set, over the neighbor's little white picket fence and into the yard. And then he'd just put his arms up, and he'd walk off the playground. And he'd only do it, like, twice a year, so it never lost its flavor.
Yeah, good, good. So I guess now I know the story of why you wear cowboy boots with Spurs to school, yeah?
That's right. I got to spur the kids on to the best they can be.
Always wondered that. Wonderful. Okay. Well, look, let's talk about you as a teacher.
Okay.
Because I've been obviously lucky enough to work with you over the past year. You've been very nice to let me come in and work with you in your class, which has been a really great learning experience for me. I mean, I'm not going to say it, but what would you say your teaching style's like in a nutshell?
You know, I always think of myself as being kind of strict, but then the kids and the people around me say I'm not.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm strict, but I believe in procedures. I believe in things having order.
Yeah.
Because honestly, the more you have order, the more the kids are listening, the better off, the more they're going to learn.
Especially when you've got, two grades, of course.
I kind of don't have the option of not having order, but there are years when you have a pretty easy class and you could let them be more chaotic. On the other hand, I don't think that you can go too far with that order. You have to have fun. Kids have to know you're human, you care about them, and have a sense of humor. So yell at them, once in a while. Yeah, you got to get into them and teach them to be self-disciplined. But also sometimes when they do something that's worthy of being yelled at, and maybe you've gotten on them all morning, you can just smile and let it go. Mm. Like, the kids need some grace. They need discipline and grace, and it's a balanced tension. So that's what I try to do. I don't always succeed.
I say you're a very honest and upfront teacher as well. I don't think you hide what, you know, your opinions and what you want to say. And even during discussion as well, I think, we've had some good discussions, haven't we, about many things. And it's just wonderful when the kids, they not only participate, but they come back the next day having done some extra research and wanting to talk to the rest of the class about it, yeah? That's why I really love your kind of age group. It's something I really gravitate towards, that grade 3, 4, 5, 6. It's a wonderful age, isn't it?
It really is. Obviously a teacher has to be careful that he's, you know, being age appropriate and explaining stuff. But I just personally don't believe it helps the kids when we sugarcoat everything. Mm. Because, the world they're going into is a complex place, and it can be a hard place. And without painting it in a negative light, I want them to know what the world's really like. I want them to be well prepared. So part of that is being straight up as much as possible and being truthful and being open-minded to hear different viewpoints.
One of the big challenges I think teachers say is that kind of idea of discipline and classroom management, especially when they come into a new school, especially when they're going to a new culture where they're going to be teaching. Can you give just, because I know a little bit about your kind of discipline classroom management approach, what you use. Mm-hmm. You've got the skulls and the certain thing. Quickly download exactly what you do, because people would love to know. So many teachers use different methods.
I would say I believe in less is more. Like, I don't have an extravagant system of stickers and all that. Basically, I give the kids 5 symbols every day, they're little brain symbols.
Okay? Little brain symbols, yeah.
And they get them at the beginning of the day, which gives the message to the kids, I believe you're going to be good, and keep these all day. If, as a class, they're not doing something right, whether it's behavioral or just messing up a procedure they shouldn't mess up, they'll lose 1 or 2 or all of those.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the simple way that we do it as a class. And that's really about it. That's all I do.
That's for the whole class, isn't it?
That's the whole class. And mainly my philosophy is that you have to train them over and over again and let them know what you expect, even if it's at the expense of the academic time at the beginning of the year. Mm. It's an investment.
Yeah.
Because you can't get mad at a kid for doing something wrong if you haven't shown them clearly what they need to do right. So that's my philosophy in a nutshell.
What about for the individual? Because I know you also have a marking system, don't you, that you keep tabs on for the individual.
Yeah.
You know, as a group, they can behave and not behave, help each other.
The first half of the year, I use an individual one that, at the beginning of the day, they get 3 A's. Each individual, not the class.
Yeah.
And A is for awesome.
Yeah.
I assume they're going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And if we have a recurring problem with one student, then I'll take an A. And basically, it's like a 3 strikes and you're out. Okay. Mm-hmm. By the end of the day, if I've taken all 3 A's from them, then there'll be a consequence, like a parent contact or something they don't like.
I think we have someone at the door. Hold on a moment.
Yeah, they're 3 minutes early. Don't the kids know my nap doesn't end until 2:14?
What's the procedure then if they lose all three strikes? What's the...
You know, I try to leave it effectively vague. Yes. Because it's not always the answer to call the parent. I mean, I obviously want to keep parents informed if there's a trend, negative trend, or a positive trend. But sometimes it just might be staying from recess or lose something cool like their time with their device. We do a lot of work with electronic devices. Yeah. It just depends. But basically, if you lose all three A's, know that there's something coming that you're going to have to pay the price.
Yeah.
For your own good, not because I want revenge.
Yeah, and let's be honest, you never really get down to that anyway, do you? Because of the...
Not very often. We have really great kids.
Yeah. So, talking about China, what's your biggest challenge being a teacher in China? The first one, I know we have many, but what's your biggest one being?
Well, you know, we're insulated from a lot of the challenges of being a teacher here because we're in an international school, and it's not an American school, but it's set up in the Western Hemisphere ways of teaching. Everything's in English. All of our staff speaks in English, so it's not challenging that way. I think more of the challenges come from living in a culture that's unfamiliar to you. So especially coming from the land of pigs and corn and soybeans, where, you know, you can drive your pickup truck through the for a half hour and not see another person.
Yes.
And then here, you can't walk, you know, 30 feet without seeing another person. So you have to make the adjustment to not only big city life, but big city life on a continent that is densely populated.
Yeah, I hear you, definitely. Now, before we bring this to an end, how about this? What's unique about your classroom, Mr. Kerr?
Well, I'd say the music is one thing. You probably agree with that.
Yeah.
I always think it's tiresome when teachers go, line up, please, and kids aren't listening half the time.
Yeah.
So I have kind of a theme song for when the kids hear it, it means something.
Yeah.
So if you hear a foghorn like you're on a cruise ship, that means, look up, I'm going to give you an instruction. Pay attention, get out of La La Land, okay? And then if you hear like some kind of rock and roll 80s sound, it probably means it's your group's turn to get up and transition over to switch books.
Yeah.
So I think the music, I feel sorry for the people that are assigned to a classroom near me, because sometimes it's a little loud.
Yeah, I finally found out who was causing all the noise. But it's wonderful, you hypnotize them over a couple of months and they just subconsciously understand. No, and it really brings an extra element to it.
Yeah.
Right, well, we're going to finish, as always, with a teacher's tip. A recipe for success if you want to compete. Teacher's tip then, just let's base it on a grade, elementary classroom, 3-4, like you've taught before. Maybe one tip, it could be anything that would come out that you would recommend to a fellow teacher doing your kind of same age group.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's specific to my age group or not, but two things that teachers struggle with, especially young teachers, which I guess I'm not as young as I'd like to be now, but they struggle with how to interact with parents. And they struggle with how to handle their own mistakes. Here's my advice. If you make a mistake that you feel bad about, apologize sincerely and move on.
Yeah.
If a parent is upset with you for a reason that's not justifiable, do not apologize just to smooth it over. Everything you do, you should have a reason and be able to justify it and articulate why you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it should always come back to benefiting the kids. If you're doing anything because it makes your ego feel good, then you probably need to reevaluate doing it. So be humble. Say you're sorry when you mess up, which, by the way, you will, no matter who you are. And stick to your guns. Believe in what you do and why you do it.
Mr. Jamie Kerr, it's been a pleasure having you on China Jedication. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.
May the smile be with you.